Welcome back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined once again by Christian Sweezy. Last we spoke, the first round of the Tabletop Lacrosse NCAA Tournament for 2020 was in the books. We had the quarterfinal sent, and since then, Christian, you have laid out the remaining seven games and crowned a champion, and we will get to that in due time. But first and foremost, thank you for joining us. How are you holding up as we continue through this quarantine experience?
You know, thank you for having me, first of all, and I'm doing all right. You know, a lot of time with my mom, a lot of time with nieces and nephews, you know, taking the proper precautions, obviously, too. But my late grandmother always said, only a boar gets bored. And so I've taken that to heart and try to, you know, there's a ton of books I've wanted to read. And obviously a lacrosse board game that I've been working on for a while that I finally finished, and, you know, a book manuscript and a few other things, plus a full-time job. So honestly, this is actually in a lot of ways gone better than I could have imagined.
So you mentioned a lacrosse board game that you've been working on, and that's what we're here to talk about today. Just for those of you that may have missed our prior conversation, Tabletop Lacrosse is a game inspired by the likes of Strat-O-Matic and other similar types of card and dice game, where you input real information and then leave it up to the chance of the cards and the chance of the dice to determine the outcomes. And so the work that you put in was creating the player roster cards, assigning scores to each player's attributes, and then creating the fast action cards so that you can actually have a game unfold with the type of randomness that we have come to expect from real sports. So is that a sufficient summary to get us back to the quarterfinal action?
Yes, much better than I could have said, actually. And the one thing that you mentioned in the previous podcast that I was meant to accentuate it, and I'm glad you did, was that there is a real balance between offense and defense. And as we get in, some of the biggest plays of this tournament are actually made by defenders, which I think is only fair.
Of course, and it's the way that the reality of the game actually works.
Yeah.
So let's start with Fair Cornell. They topped the North Carolina Tar Heels 12-9 in the quarterfinals. You know, you mentioned defensive plays. You know, this was a three-goal game, but it was Gavin Adler, the pesky defenseman for the Big Red, who made the final play that set up the final series of the game. Jeff Teat, always one of the most prolific scorers in college lacrosse, finished with 2 goals and 3 assists. Michael Long had 3 goals, and they were the leading scorers for the Big Red. Chris Gray also had 5 points, and Caton Johnson had 15 saves for the Tar Heels.
What surprised me about this game, Cornell was ahead 10-9 in the fourth quarter and was called for a penalty. It was the first chance for North Carolina to go on extra man. And just judging by numbers and a little bit of the eyeball test and talking to other opposing coaches, I had North Carolina's extra man unit ranked at double A. So it's double A, B, C, D, and E. And I think they were the only double A that I created for 2020. Sorry. And so they're on extra man. They're down 10-9. I'm thinking, all right, Cook is getting the shot because he's the great extra man shooter, or Gray. And I pull the first 1 through 20 deck of cards, and it was a 6. And before the tournament started, on my little extra man chart for double A, I had switched 6 and 18 because I was finding, you know, a lot of the high numbers favor the offense, a lot of the low numbers favor the defense. So like 1 through 7, I was like, well, those are always favoring the offense, and 15 through 20 always favor the defense. Let me switch one of those. So I flipped 6 and 18. So 6 became a turnover and 18 became a shot for a 5-factor shooter. So when I pulled the 6 out at 10-9, I literally stared at it for a minute. I couldn't stare at it for too long because I was live tweeting and all these things. But I thought, wow, what, you know, I don't know if that's really, yeah. I mean, to me, honestly, maybe it was a little bit realistic because it was just such a, you know, something you would definitely remember. Wow, they could have tied it at 10, and instead the pass goes out of bounds. Cornell clears. They score to make it 11-9, and then Carolina's chasing. As you said, Adler makes a big play, and then it's 12-9, and that's the final score. But I remember just thinking, like, that is sort of, you know, these games have become so competitive, and the windows are so tight that one turnover really was a play in the game.
And in the second quarterfinal at Brown, Princeton 16, Ohio State 13. The Tigers were led by Alex Verdero and Phil Robertson, who both had 4 goals and 7 assists from Michael Sowers. Trey LeClaire had 5 goals, while Jack Myers had 3 goals and 3 assists for the Buckeyes.
Ohio State jumped out to that big, like 3-0 lead, 4-0 lead. So I have it right in front of me, 5-1 lead actually. And then Cornell kind of chipped away. Or, sorry, Princeton chipped away, chipped away, chipped away. And really, you know, again, one of the other things that I liked about my game, and it wasn't necessarily built in, but there were a lot of momentum swings, a lot of runs back and forth. And even, you know, here we are in the Princeton scored four in a row and spin in the second and third quarters. They scored four out of five in the fourth quarter. So, and I think again that it happens in our sport. My game wasn't necessarily geared to momentum one way or the other, but again, it was something that I was very grateful that it played out that way because I do think that that's things you see. You know, the goalie gets hot, makes a save, or a big hit, even a legal hit, obviously, can sometimes turn an entire game around. I'll never forget being on Long Island for the 1998 Syracuse Virginia quarterfinal, and Virginia was ahead 14-8 in the third, midway through the third quarter, and it just looked like they were coasting. And this was Syracuse that still had that incredible run of Final Fours or championship weekend appearances. And Casey Powell scored a goal behind the back, and he was hit as it was called a late hit penalty on Virginia. So now it's 14-9. Syracuse is on extra man, and the PA announcer says, "With that goal, Casey Powell has become the all-time leading scorer in Syracuse lacrosse history." And you could tell the entire Syracuse sideline just completely changed. Their complete body language changed. And they might have won the game 17-14 or 18-15, something like that, just completely going away. You know, in those final 18 minutes, they just went crazy with their goals. And that was something that, you know, I kind of like about our sport, these shifts in momentum. And again, with the face-off, you know, if you win five face-offs in a row, a team can have a one goal lead and then be down by four and not have to having not touched the ball. So it's something that makes our sport really unique. So I was grateful that there were some momentum swings in my board game.
I apologize. I went out of order, and that was the first game on
That's fine.
Sunday. Yeah, I skipped over the second game on Saturday, and it was one of the best. Yale 12, Virginia 11, getting a measure of revenge for the 2019 NCAA championship in which the Cavaliers won 13-9. Matt Gaudette, of course. How could he do anything other than score five goals in an NCAA tournament game? Whereas Jack Samora put up 5 points and Jack Starr had 14 saves for the Bulldogs.
And the reason it was confusing to you, I think, was because I had Princeton and Cornell, the winners of those quarterfinals matched up in the semifinals, but they were at different sites. And again,
Yep.
I kind of put on my NCAA tournament hat saying, well, I think if Providence has the five, Providence is the five seed, you know, that quarterfinals at Brown, how about we funnel that Providence UMass winner to Brown? And, you know, just, I just sort of broke things up that way. I wanted Maryland and the Maryland Carolina winner on Long Island. So that was why it was a little bit confusing.
Got it.
But
Well,
yes, that was.
understandable. So how about this game though?
So UVA, you know, again, the high numbers tend to favor the defense. And every time it seemed like they had a chance to complete a pass or shot on goal, I was pulling 18s, 19s, and 20s, which are either ground balls or just passes out of bounds, you know, too high, too low, whatever it might be. And then all of a sudden, you know, a little bit like that 98 game I was describing, minus a late hit. But all of a sudden, Virginia kind of came back. They came back and tied it at 11. And at 11, TD Erland won the faceoff. Yale gets a shot. And it's sort of to your point, Gaudette is getting the shot. You know, that was one of the things I enjoyed about the game, was trying to put my coach's hat on a little bit less, not as much a writer's hat or a fan's hat, and say, okay, well, and again, making sure that I wasn't overusing players, although some of that is built into the game, not to overuse them. But Gaudette, I thought, yeah, there's one guy getting the shot, and it's Gaudette. And he did, and he scored to make it 12-11. And I seem to recall, even at 12-11, in the final minute, Virginia actually had possession. And Hines, the defenseman from Yale, who you need an ace. He needed on his card, he needed an ace to do a takeaway check, and that was what I pulled. So he stripped the UVA attackman. Yale cleared and wound up winning the game 12-11 because that was the guy I wanted to dodge on. But I thought UVA, when they had possession at 12-11, needing goal, I said, well, Krause did it against Penn State in the first round, either with a feed or with a shot himself. And Hines was guarding Krause. I said, oh, yeah, let me see if I can do this again. But Hines came through.
And I would imagine a blow to Lars Tiffany, who already identified himself as a tabletop lacrosse fan by virtue of his growing up as a Strat-O-Matic fan.
Yes, I've not heard from him since, just for the record.
All right, and for as for the last quarterfinal, you mentioned funneling the winner of the UMass Providence game to Brown, and that meant that they took on the Syracuse Orange. The Orange emerged on top 16-9. Chase Scanlon had 4 goals. Stephen Rafus had 5 assists to lead the Syracuse, formerly Saltine Warriors. Billy Philpott had 3 goals, and Gavin Prosek had 2 goals for the Minutemen.
And this was a game Syracuse got out in front pretty early. UMass came back, 4-4, then it went 5-4. And Syracuse, again, in the second half, just kind of pulled away. But there was also a sequence kind of late in the first half, 8-6. UMass was within 8-6. Prosek had just scored an extra man. And they had possession again and had a very good look. And Porter saved it. And then Syracuse went down the other end and scored. Fernandez, actually, the long stick midi off the rebound. Because Porter saved the shot but didn't control it right away. Fernandez went down, give and go, and he scored. And I remember that was a big sequence. And Syracuse scored a couple to start the second half because they were doing well on faceoffs. And all of a sudden, 8-6 with a shot on goal for UMass becomes 11-6 the other way. And from there, Syracuse just kind of put the game away by winning faceoffs and controlling the ball.
And it set up a semifinals in which, as you mentioned, number 2 seed Cornell took on number 6 seed Princeton, and the number 1 overall seed Yale Bulldogs took on the number 4 seed Syracuse Orange. But before we get to the semis, Christian, now through the quarters, you have 12 games that you have played and tweeted. And I would imagine you've done it over the course of 2 weekends. A lot of the social media content had gotten repurposed by Inside Lacrosse and started to develop, some particular attention. What type of feedback were you getting heading into the Final Four weekend?
I was very gratified. It seemed to sort of pick up steam. The Army-Navy game did kind of well, but I didn't actually have the teams ready when the actual Army-Navy game would have taken place, which I think was that last weekend in April. So I played it the first weekend of May, which might have thrown people off a little bit. And it's also a little bit of a curveball. Hey, here's the Army-Navy game that isn't a real Army-Navy game, but it's real players. and it's happening right when the game would have started. So, and it has, switched out real stats. So, I think it was a little bit slow going. And I was kind of honestly like, I hope I'm not playing an empty room here. But by the quarterfinals, I was actually really pleased and grateful with Inside Lacrosse's help and tagging Inside Lacrosse and tagging some of the social medias, which I didn't want to do too much of. I didn't want to tag UMass Twitter account, hey, you're losing 16-9. I didn't think that was appropriate. But I was actually grateful that a lot of the tweets, especially the final score tweets and stat tweets and halftime tweets, were getting, 30, 32,000 impressions, which, on a weekend where there's no real action going on, I thought was actually kind of decent.
For sure. For sure. And then obviously as the tournament continued, the anecdotal and direct contact and feedback through social media started to build as well. And I thought that there was a really funny balance of people who were upset at the outcomes with people who were grateful that you had undertaken the exercise and tried to fill a void a little bit as well.
And that was one of the things I think I mentioned in our last podcast, if one person said, oh, you helped fill the void for me or give me a sense of closure. And I was very grateful. I got a few messages sort of along those lines, because I do think that as fans, and I think everyone listening to this podcast can relate, for us, Memorial Day weekend means really one thing. March, April, May weekends mean one thing. And you sort of build this habit or ritual over all these years, and all of a sudden it's kind of taken away. And I understood why those decisions were made, obviously, but it still leaves a void and still is reality. And so I was very, that was the one thing I wanted to do, although I did put the semifinals at night just because these were Hobby Lobby cardstock and not real players. And so I thought I could get away with it. But, one of the things I really wanted to do was, okay, we're lacrosse fans and that, we have all day Saturday games. We have all day Sunday games. It was tricky to live tweet all those and play all those back to back. But I was like, oh, okay. I think that's the way it should be done. And I think we're creatures of habit. And I was trying to sort of, on top of everything else, I was trying to play that role as well.
So to shift the focus to the semifinals, like I mentioned, the matchups were first Cornell versus Princeton. That game got going at 6 p.m., as you mentioned, with the Big Red emerging victorious 12-11 over the Tigers. Brendan Salvatore made the play of the game with a late interception. Muggle Sowers finished with 2 goals and an assist. Teat had a goal and 4 assists. And Jonathan Donville had 3-1 for the Big Red. Were you surprised by this outcome?
A little bit. At first, I thought it would be a little bit higher scoring. And someone actually on Twitter said, I thought that game would be higher scoring. And I agreed. But, both goalies made 13 saves. And again, as you mentioned, both defenses played pretty well. It's something I borrowed from the Avalon Hill Game Company since defunct, but I always thought it was funny. Avalon Hill was based in Baltimore. Stratomatic and my Adores based on Long Island. Yet neither one of them ever came up with a lacrosse game. Like, really, guys? Like, you're kind of in the hotbeds. But one of the things I borrowed from Avalon Hill was something called a Z card. Like, literally, the card's just a Z. And there are certain, you know, you put two or three in the deck, maybe one or two, depending on the teams or what have you. And whatever happens after that Z card is something completely random. It could be a stick check. It can be a, you know, a 3-minute penalty. It can be an injury, all sorts of random things. And so I pulled the Z card, and the very next card said D1, defenseman one, interception clears. And I thought, wow. And then I won't give away the who, but it happened again. But I made sure every time I pulled that Z card, I made sure to get rid of the card after it, so it would be something completely different the next time. And again, I think I mentioned before, I created 65 fast action cards, but only used between 40 and 45 for each quarter. So I always had 20 in reserve, just, you know, for timeouts or things like that. But also, so I wasn't using the same cards over and over and over.
And as you mentioned, you know, obviously it yielded a wild game, right? One that, you know, was potentially a little bit more defense oriented than you had otherwise anticipated.
Yes, you know, Princeton was held to 35 shots. Cornell took 41. You know, it's some of that, I think, you know, again, putting on my coach's hat for a second, I said, well, no, if Cornell has the ball, we're going to want to control it a little bit, maybe more than usual, keep it away from Sowers and that offense, because they looked so effective, you know, 15 goals against Villanova, 16 against Ohio State. So, you know, I thought that might be the way Cornell would approach it.
You mentioned high scoring, and that's what we had in the other semifinal. Hmm. Syracuse topped Yale 16-15, an attempt to pass the ball inside for a feed in the final seconds was knocked down, and time expired before anybody was able to gather control. That was the way the game ended. Chase Scanlon finished with 6 goals, and Drake Porter had 13 saves for Syracuse. Again, Matt Gaudette had 5 goals. Jackson Morrow this time, 1-5 for the Bulldogs.
And Yale had a shot at 16-15, but it was a guarded shot. There were 2 fast action cards left in the game. And the first, you know, and I thought, well, you know, Maryland in the first round took that guarded shot, and Caton Johnson saved it, and they wound up losing. I thought, no, I'm going to hold off, and I'm going to see if I can get a little bit of a better look, or at least be able to pass the ball inside, because this was a guarded shot for a midfielder. I said, well, let me see if I can get the ball inside. Obviously, as you said, Gaudette had looked pretty good. It looked pretty good all tournament. He, at that point, he had a tournament high 14 goals. But the next card said GB, ground ball. And it was a pass completed like 1 through 12, GB 13 through 20. And I think my 1 through 20 card was a 17. So ground ball, and sort of the game ended right then and there.
And it set up a rematch of the 2009 National Championship game in Upstate Classic.
On the same day, I think.
I think so, too. I noticed that not in the moment, but a couple days later. And along those lines, there was a moment when this felt more real than typical. Midway through the fourth quarter, it wasn't clear exactly how much time was left, but I saw this and responded to it. Turnover Syracuse, a forced pass under the crease is knocked down, and Adler gets the GB for Cornell. And then Cook gets a caused turnover by pushing the Cornell midi out of bounds on the attempted clear. And I just said, oh no.
Yeah, that was, you know, not to get too metaphysical, but I did make the sign of the cross before all these. I had a little icon with me, and I just thought, well, it just helped these games to be fun for people. And I'm grateful because one way or the other they were, but yeah, that was something. And again, I was trying to, you know, some teams don't really ride all that much, but Virginia, Syracuse, you know, Griffin Cook actually led Syracuse in cost turnovers through 5 games, however many it was. And Rafis, I think, was second or third on the team. So I figured, well, they have a very good ride. I built that into the game as well. And that was what happened. You know, Adler got a GB, was racing out of bounds, and Cook shoved them to retain possession for Syracuse. Just funny how these little things, just the cards kept spitting out, cards and dice kept spitting out these results. And again, if I were, someone told me later, said, you know, if you were writing these and making them up off the top of your head, you couldn't have written that. Because there's, everyone would say, well, what are you talking about? That is exactly what happened in 09. But because it was the dice and cards, I was able to say, well, no, this is what happened.
And it set up a Brennan Curry goal that tied the game at 15 with 6 minutes left. Do you want to take it from there?
So from there, yes, thank you, actually, I will. And from there, actually, I had to switch. My goals had run out, so I had to go to a second sheet of score pad from there. But yeah, so Syracuse tied at 15. Dordovic actually gave Syracuse a lead 16-15 on an assist by Rafus, which was his fourth assist. Salvatore was guarding him, and I thought did pretty well overall. So 16-15, Cornell ties it. Piatelli from Telesco on a dodge and feed ties it at 16. Cornell actually had possession in the final two FACs, which is the final 40 seconds, 30 seconds or so. But Porter made a nice save, and no one controlled that rebound before the game went to overtime. And one of the things, one of my pet peeves about overtime, sudden death overtime, is that not, you know, sometimes only one team gets the ball. And I was grateful that in my game, Cornell got possession first, you know, and Syracuse was plus two all day on faceoffs because Borrello and Fopp are so good. Petrakis is fine, but Syracuse has very good faceoff guys. And so it was a 1-13 for Syracuse when that faceoff and it pulled at 17 or an 18. So Cornell won the opening faceoff in overtime, sudden death overtime, and took a shot that Porter saved, and Syracuse cleared, and the ball went to one of the attackmen, and I threw the Z card, and I threw the D1 intercept clear again. Again, I completely switched those. I made sure that the whatever came after the next Z card was not going to be that coming from the semifinal, but it happened again. And then by this point, by the way, I was nervous. Like, the dice were sticking to my hands because I was kind of sweating and kind of nervous, and I got a couple text messages saying, wow, this is really close, or this is really intense. So I was nervous, I will admit, and I was just playing the game. Imagine having, or just, you know, with dice and cards, imagine actually coaching or playing in that. I got a new respect for some of the pressure that these guys must feel. And then, so it was a guarded shot by a three. An SAH member is different from X. In X, the defender does have a chance to take away checker, to stay in the hands, whatever. For me, but the problem was that I wasn't getting enough shots if every shot was an X. So about three quarters are X's and one quarter are SHs. And then SH basically means the offensive player has gotten a step on his defender and does have a shot. The defender's plus minus still plays into a factor. But I said, well, no, I think that does happen. You know, even the best defenders give up a few shots. So, and you have to determine who's going to shoot before, you know, anyway. So I gave it to Donville. I thought, well, he has a decent matchup. It's a long stick midi. But Dirth had played very well on his matchup. And I said, well, and the other guy wasn't a five or a three. So it had to be Donville or one of the attackmen who would, you know, again, I like that Syracuse close defense. I said, well, let me just dodge on this matchup. And I rolled the dice, and it was a 22, which is a shot on goal. And I rolled on the Syracuse goalies card. Of course, Porter had been arguably the MVP in the entire tournament, but it came up a 10, which is a goal that he gives up. So Cornell won.
So when it was finally over and you had played 15 tournament games in addition to a playing game, in addition to an Army-Navy game, you had played 17 games. I mean, what kind of goes through your head in terms of what you're hoping, I don't want to say to get out of this, but like, how satisfying, I guess, is the first question that I want to know the answer to?
For me, personally, I have to admit, I was really satisfied just because it had been so much fun. You know, I had so much fun playing those semifinals and the title game and the quarterfinals, and even working with Brian Coughlin to come up with the bracket, which he did almost the entire thing, for the record. But just like, oh yeah, but let's do the ESPN thing where we figure out the matchups that we put on prime time. And I mean, just from start to finish, it was really, I was very gratified and maybe even a little bit surprised. It never felt like work. It always felt like this is really fun. I was really looking forward. You know, I could barely wait till Saturday at 6 and start playing the first and second semifinals. So even though it was a lot of work, you know, I was, especially the live tweeting and keeping my own stats, like it was sort of the one man show. But I'm grateful at how much I enjoyed it.
So where do you go from here? What's next?
I definitely want to do an all time greats tournament, sort of with the 50th anniversary of the NCAA tournament, kind of, you know, who are the maybe picks. I would like to pick 17, but maybe we'll figure out a different number, but some number of, the NCAA champions, and sort of, you know, well, who's the best one? I personally would say it's either 90 Syracuse, who had to get the title back, which is a whole other discussion, but I think they would be in our tournament, or 76 Cornell. But from there, we could do, I mean, it's almost limitless. You know, we could do the best team not to win it, which might be 76 Maryland or 95 Johns Hopkins. You know, we could do, Patrick Stevens had a suggestion, we'll play the 06 Duke. You know, there's enough stats in 06 Duke, you could kind of replay that season, see what happened. Or, you know, I could play an NCAA tournament from 96, I think, when Bucknell went undefeated and didn't get in. I could easily, I could get the Bucknell stats and maybe play the NCAA 1996 tournament with Bucknell in instead of, I guess it was Loyola who got in over them. So, yeah, I think that there's, at least I hope that there's still an appetite for this, because I had so much fun doing it that I literally cannot wait to do it again.
And one of the things that springs to mind as being a completely different wrinkle, so to speak, is, this is a game, you played it almost as a simulation, but it's also a game in which you could play against somebody sitting across from you, representing their
yes.
own team and, trying
yes.
to win in their own way, correct?
Yes, absolutely. And hopefully that was one of the things that maybe had come across, and you were, again, smart to pick that up, is that there is risk-reward, but there is also some... you have to do a little bit of coaching. It's not on autopilot, for instance. There are some decisions you have to make. And even in the title game, one of the attackmen, I don't think there's a need to mention him, but one of the attackmen was like 0 for 6, 0 for 7 shooting. And I thought, well, I don't want him to shoot. It's just the way the dice were. His card was fine. He had played great in the other games. So I just thought, no, he's 0 for 7. I can't do it. So, I subbed him out, put him back in, and he wound up scoring and getting an assist. So we wound up finishing okay, but those are the sorts of things you really have to think about. And now he was 0 for 3, and I thought, get him a shot, and he missed it. 0 for 4, raised his feet up, missed it. And I just thought, wow, this is crazy.
It is amazing. I mean, when the goal is to try to make it as realistic as possible, and you can have a conversation about something that, as you said, exists on cardstock, and it sounds just as real and just as legitimate as it would be if it had happened on your television, it really shines a different light on this is going to sound too bold and too strong, but shines a different light on sports. I'm like, what we actually are doing here with respect to, all these things. And it's certainly not to conflate or take away from things that actually happen in reality. Like, that's not what this conversation is. It's just to say that when you do the work to try to create something as representative of what we've seen on the field, you can create an approximation that is a lot more familiar than you might expect before you actually start the exercise. And I know that that was a huge part of what you were trying to accomplish. And I just want to tip my cap to you and say congratulations, because in my mind,
thank you.
Definitely a job well done.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. And I did read at Loyola as an undergrad, we read Universal Baseball Association, J. Henry Waugh, proprietor. And it's all about a guy who creates his own baseball dice and card game and like goes crazy. It's a little bit like Diary of a Madman, only a baseball board game centric. So I kind of had that in the back of my head, like, all right, don't be that guy. Don't go too crazy over all this stuff. But I think, or at least I hope, that I was able to strike a balance. And honestly, like, I missed the game already. Like, wow, I kind of missed playing this game. So I missed that of, setting the game up and waiting for the clock to hit whatever time the point of game was to start. I definitely missed them already. But if I'd gotten one like or one retweet, that would have been fine for me. So I'm grateful to all the people who actually did enjoy it, and to those who didn't, at least they cared enough to tell me they didn't.
Well, no better endorsement than your own excitement to partake in a game that you devised. So Christian, as always, appreciate your time on the Inside the Cross podcast. Thanks so much for the yeoman's effort to get this done, and can't wait to see whatever the next endeavor holds.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. I appreciate it on all counts.